This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand and live. We're live on Twitch today. Today, October 24th, 2021, Sunday. And today on the program, we're going to talk about, of course, TV ratings. The kinds of TV ratings. Not just final ratings, but fast affiliates. Fast nationals. Again, because AEW was in preemption. Fox aired a replay of SmackDown. We'll talk about everything that's going on in the world of wrestling TV ratings, but also we're going to go to a place that we don't always go these days. New Japan business. We've got some details from the public reporting from New Japan's parent company, Bushiroad. We will go over those details today as the G1 Climax came to a conclusion just a few days ago. And then there's another large-scale international event in a country not to be named. And finally, we'll talk about a recent WWE stock analysis that came out from a stock analyst. That's where those things usually come from. All that today and more. But first,
and yeah, it's another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. Chris Gillow joining alongside Brandon Thurston, and it was a little bit of normalcy, and we'll get kicked off here with SmackDown, which was on Fox, but we'll be back on FS1 next week.
Yes, but wait a minute.
But
look at this. Speaking of normalcy, I did a house call, as people may know, last week. I did watch it back, and it looks like we are not in person. We had the most not in person looking in person podcast I've ever seen. Have you seen it? Did you see like a little bit of it at least?
Yeah, I will go back and watch it to see how it looked.
Because so I'm using this webcam. We will not use that webcam again for something like that. But like it's a little bit of a fisheye, so we look a little bit bent, and I'm not completely on the screen at parts. And it looks like somebody could have spliced us together. You know, just too short. We could have done this, you know, like, it looks like it might as well have been this for people watching on Twitch right now. It may have well just been us sitting. Look, we're in the same room. Hi. Here, fist, over here. Fist bump me. You're not going to fist bump me. Okay, fine. I've been disrespectful.
Oh,
it's too late. I'm gone. I'm going to complain about you in the locker room now. but that happened. I fixed your microphone. Your microphone that, I've been complaining about for months. We have spent a lot of time trying to fix your microphone. However, we discovered that your microphone actually does have a hole that you can plug a set of headphones into. This is a new discovery. And now you're actually hearing me. You're hearing yourself, I should say, through your headphones.
Yes.
Like a real radio broadcaster, right? And yes, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. And I'm experimenting with some different music. This has to be royalty free music. That's why it was different. And you're actually hearing this music. So in the future, if we play audio clips and things of that nature, like maybe this clip.
The Bears are what we thought they were. They're what we thought they were. The Bears are who we thought they were.
So if we play clips.
That's why we took the damn field.
So we can play clips like that. And you heard that.
Yeah.
Technological achievement. It's a very complicated process. I've got like four lights surrounding me. I've got a green screen. Golo's got a green screen on the way. This is all thanks, by the way, and funded by WrestleNomics subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. So thanks to everybody for your support. And you are the executive producers of this program. Yes. You have something else too. don't you?
Well, yes.
Tell, especially for the people who are listening in audio only, what do you have in your hand right now?
It is an official WrestleNomics coffee mug, but what's interesting is in the back, a nice bar graph, which you can find this graph on the WrestleNomics Patreon. This graph here of U.S. TV rights deal.
It's not on the Patreon. It's a very similar bar chart to what is on the header of the WrestleNomics Twitter account. What does it show, though?
It shows the U.S. TV rights agreements timeline, and that's for Raw, SmackDown, and Dynamite.
Yes. Informative and useful at the same time. Historically, what happens when we bring out WrestleNomics coffee mugs? I have one in my hand right now. This one has the WrestleMania attendances on it, and this is the real attendances based on what they've published in key performance indicators. What has happened historically is that we have sort of just bought this for ourselves and to have, and then listeners respond enthusiastically, and they're like, give me that. I want one. And then it was a few years ago now, but we got like 20 or 30 of them, and they went pretty fast. So if there's similar response, maybe I'll look into a bulk order or something. But now Golo has a WrestleNomics mug. I have, just because I can't help myself, I have to one up you. I have two WrestleNomics mugs. One has coffee and water, because I need many beverages to supply this system that we have here. But anyway, yes. Moving on.
All right, so moving on into the world of the business of professional wrestling for the week. And we'll start off with SmackDown. SmackDown back here on Friday night, at least for this week, on Fox. Now, this is based on preliminary data from Nielsen. And this would be the FAST affiliates. And we're looking at 2.22 million for the P2 Plus with a 0.58 in 1849 based on early projections. And obviously, it's kind of compared to last week's, which was on FS1, which did 866 with 0.24. But back on SmackDown, over 2 million. I'm sorry, back on Fox, over 2 million. But of course, it's a 1 week thing for right now.
I should tell you here, too, these columns here that show the deltas, which is just a fancy word for the differences. I've changed this to show the comparison versus the last 4 weeks. Median of the last four, which is my favorite measurement to compare a given rating against. I felt the best thing to do because we have these preemptions happening. So if you take the median of the last four SmackDowns, for example, the median gets rid of what would be misleading in an average or just a comparison to last week. Because if we were just comparing to last week, the difference would be like 150%.
Yeah.
This is comparing to the last four. So it's, you know, this is a good rating. This is a pretty good rating for SmackDown.
So. Yeah, it was coming down the heels of Crown Jewel, which aired Thursday afternoon on Peacock.
The large scale international event. Did you watch the large scale international event?
I have not yet. I was working during the day on Thursday, and then I was out of town this weekend at a cabin with my wife celebrating our anniversary. So I have not watched any of these wrestling programs.
Happy anniversary. I saw all the Instagram posts celebrating this.
Yes.
Like pictures of like Puff and Kevin Blackwood and Kevin Bennett and the man formerly known as Body all together. They were all at your wedding.
Yes. Yeah. I always remember like, wow, I had that many wrestlers at my weddings.
Come to think of it, probably a story we haven't told in this program yet. Did you have a bachelor party or a stag? Because there's a difference, right?
I had a stag.
You had a stag.
Yeah, I had a stag, yes.
Stags are, from what I understand, stags are a little bit more, what's the word?
Like a fundraiser?
Reckless? I don't know.
I wouldn't say that.
Some, I'm not yours in particular. Speaking.
Yes.
Generally. Yes. Did you have any special guests at your stag?
I did. I was unaware of this before the stag happened, but here I am at the stag. A few of the guys.
Surprise guests.
They got Virgil. Virgil. Just show up. He showed up with a giant stack of 8x10s. I think he sold two. But Yep, he was just there. And one of the guys that helped pay for the restaurant was like, hey, man, he doesn't really, like, drink alcohol or anything, so can you just have pizza and stuff? I'm like, yeah, sure. He's a special guest.
They, like, paid his... I think he's out of Pittsburgh or something, right?
Yes. Pittsburgh, yeah.
Excellent. Anyway, yeah. So some of the ratings information we're talking about today are fast ratings. Before we go any further with the ratings, can you, Chris Gullo, remember/tell us what the three ratings are and what they actually mean, what they are? Define them.
Well, fast affiliates, you're only going to get that with your broadcast networks, your ABCs, your Foxes, your CBSs, and all that. And that's based on all the data they get from their affiliates. For example, Fox 29 in Buffalo and whatever, Fox 45 in Rochester, or whatever it is. But yeah, you're going to get a base data on that. But that's why we had the skewed numbers back with preseason football, because they're just pulling everything that's on every Fox affiliate. But then you had to remember that half those things were playing preseason football. Not half of them, but some of them were, instead of SmackDown.
Usually they're pretty reliable, but they're... Yeah. With some rare exceptions like that, the finals are always higher than the fast affiliates. But go on. Number two, kind of rating that we'll talk about.
Fast nationals. And this would be for your broadcast networks. This is something that's very pricey too. Like, you have to get from Nielsen to get that data
only
out.
Only broadcast?
No, it's a cable. This is cable, I said. Cable networks, I meant. That's
both.
What I meant.
It could be, it's either.
Cable and broadcast. Yes. But yeah, this would be cable and broadcast from Nielsen. And you would have to help me on how accurate this normally is when the final rating comes out.
I'm glad you asked, because guess what? There's a slide for that. So here's the differences. People watching on video right now can see. If we just look at P2 Plus, which is total viewership, the difference. So, I'm searching for a word other than conspicuously, because I've been using it a lot. For whatever reason, there have been, weekly reports of fast nationals throughout the month of October for Rampage, somewhat for SmackDown too. So the difference in total viewership for Rampage, looking at the fast national against what we eventually learn, the final rating, has been 5% higher, 8% higher, 5% higher. This is old. This is an old version of this. No, it's not. Yeah, that's the extent. So we don't know. We'll know on Monday what the final is. So it's been between 5% and 8% lower, roughly speaking, because the math is different when you're talking about lower versus higher. But anyway, the final has been 5% to 8% higher. Now the demo has been less predictable. We've got two cases where we've known the fast national in the demo, and then of course known the fast national, then of course known the demo in the final, and it's been 4% higher on the final, and then in another week the demo was 15% higher. I was going to say this was the week where it went against FS1, but it was not. So big range of volatility there, but the lesson seems to be that the final ends up being substantially higher. And similar is the case for SmackDown too. It was 6% higher in total viewership, 9% higher in total viewership, and the one demo rating that we have on a fast national for SmackDown, which was October 8th, it was 14% higher in the final rating. So lots of volatility there when you're trying to predict the demo. But what I found when looking at the fast affiliates, which are the regular, normal... This is my makeup, by the way. As I gesture here, I'm wearing a little bit of concealer today. The fast affiliates are pretty consistent. They're consistently about 5 to 6% higher in total viewership. I don't really bother trying to figure out the demo, because the information that we get in the fast affiliate for the demo is to the tenth place. Following all that, the tenth place.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on.
All right. So, moving on. And if we want to kind of talk about this, the Fast Nationals, alert here, we had a tweet from Alfred Kanua.
Yes.
For SmackDown.
And Forbes.
Yeah. He's saying 2.101 mil up 4% from last week, and 18 to 49 at 684,000 up 15% from October 8th and number one on TV. and then we'll talk about the Rampage rating, and then we can kind of talk about the second part of that tweet there. But Rampage, this is what we have preliminary data as well. Brandon is projecting 550,000 to P2 Plus with a 0.29 and 18-49. That is slightly down for P2 from last week with 538, but up in the 18-49 with 0.24. So probably that half an hour maybe helped with no half hour competition, maybe helped with the 18-49 rating there. But you're looking at over the last 4 weeks, though, it has been down 7% in the 18-49, which is.
Yeah, well, because the bundle of 4 weeks in the trail here are the back end of Rampage settling down into whatever it's going to settle down into. So it's, I mean, the first 2 months or so of Rampage have been this cooling period. And there's been baseball competition in there as well. But a lot of it, I think, is just initial excitement about the new program and then that settling off.
And, Alfred Kanua, on his tweet said, Rampage 515,000 down 11% from last week. 18-49, he's predicting 272,000 down 13% from the 15th.
He's not predicting, he's
reporting. Or the first, yeah. The first, the Fast Nationals, yes.
SmackDown so these are Fast Nationals that he's reporting that would be from Nielsen. I'm taking these numbers and saying, okay, according to what the differences have been in the past versus the final, this is what I expect for the final. Because I think it's fine to report Fast Nationals. I think it needs the context of if we're thinking of, because what all we're comparing this to in our history is the final ratings. So what is this going to be for a final rating is what I'm trying to go.
And just one note too, he said that SmackDown doubled Rampage in 18-49 in its return to Fox, which I mean it's kind of expected as far as with it being a broadcast network versus a cable network, and in time slot wise too. Yeah. All right, any other thing, anything on Rampage that you want to touch?
I don't think so. Not really. I did a whole program on Monday. Right? Monday on the 30 minute war. That's on YouTube. Where we talked about all of the head to head stuff. We have the head to head slide here that we can put on the screen real quick. I don't know if there's anything interesting that stands out here, but, basically so this is not this most recent Friday, but now two Fridays ago, the image on the screen right now shows the 30 minutes where the two programs did run head to head and, SmackDown well ahead in total viewership. But Rampage has a 15% lead in the demo, 328 to 285,000. Rampage ahead on every demo within the demo that we have spliced out here, except for women 35 to 49.
All right, and as we talk about it next week, SmackDown will be back on FS1 for the World Series.
That's right.
As we are now going into the World Series, which the Atlanta Braves advanced for the National League last night as we're recording this.
Yes. And the ALCS, what happened in the ALCS?
The Houston Astros advanced, defeating the Boston Red Sox.
In what game? What game number?
I don't have that number on top of
it. Game six.
I told you, game six.
Game six, which meant that there's no game seven. Where was Game 7 supposed to air?
It was supposed to air Friday night.
It was supposed on what network?
On Fox.
On Fox. So, open time slot at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. What else airs on at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, at least on this particular weekend?
Saturday Night Dynamite on TNT.
So, what ended up happening is this. Go ahead and tell us what happened.
All right, so we found this out. I think this came down the pike Saturday morning, if I remember.
Yes,
that first I heard Fox that. Fox was going to air an encore presentation of SmackDown with a special look at that large scale international event, and that was going to air at 8 o'clock. An encore of what they aired on Friday night there at 8 o'clock. So very interesting. But hey, they're not in competition. Brandon with AEW, they don't acknowledge it's not, they're not in competition. No, they just, you know what? They figure, why not give to the fans? Give them an encore on Saturday.
Probably just a coincidence. So what we have here on the screen is the fast affiliate for that Saturday, which is, this is according to Nielsen via Spoiler TV.
Yeah, so 613,000
is what I projected. Is what I'm projecting. So the real fast affiliate number is 578,000. If you tack on, and I don't know if this is going to be a different delta here because it's a different kind of audience maybe. It's just replay, so it's not maybe the normal kind of audience. But anyway, if we tack 6% onto this, which is usually the difference between the fast affiliate and the final rating for SmackDown, it ends up being 613,000. If we look at our spreadsheet, our big spreadsheet, which patrons have access to at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, Dynamite last week in the same time slot, Saturday night at 8, did 727,000 viewers. That would be substantially higher. That would be higher by over 100,000 viewers than 613. Was there more competition though on Saturday night? Was there a baseball game on last night?
Yeah. TBS had the Braves game.
Okay. Was there basketball? Was there anything else on TV?
I mean, I'm sure there was basketball, NHL.
Well, but in any event, or maybe
college just football.
Yeah. Or maybe there was less interest in TNT. This number, these numbers could be quite close, but we'll find out, the Saturday ratings on Tuesday morning. So we get everything is sort of delayed by a day in Nielsen world, one business day. So we have the weekend ratings on Tuesday. So we'll find out about that. And I'll be tweeting about that Tuesday morning, probably. So I'll get an extra Tuesday, early day tweet storm. So there's that. What was also advertised during Dynamite last night?
Yeah, Dynamite is back. When live on Wednesday, starting this week here. I found it interesting though from your little graph that it would start later on Mountain Time.
Yes, 10 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Mountain Time. So I haven't totally thought this through. This means that. So at 8 p.m. Eastern, it is 5 p.m. Pacific.
Yes, yeah.
And on the West Coast, in normal situations, Dynamite doesn't even air live on the West Coast. Mm.
No, it's the TNT West Coast feed. TNT basically does their schedule as if in that time zone.
Unless it's sports, though, right? Like, they're not...
Yeah, live sports, yes.
First of all, the reason why this is happening is because of hockey, I believe, right?
I would imagine. I'm wondering if TNT has a Colorado Avalanche game that day, and that's why that Mountain Standard Time is so late.
Why don't you look that up if you can? But so Dynamite is going to air at 10 p.m. in the Pacific Time Zone, 11 p.m. Mountain, which you would think it would be the other way around, right? 10 Mountain. I don't know. Anyway, it's going to air later. We're probably going to see a reflection of that in the rating. I don't believe this has ever happened before for Dynamite. I don't think there's any comparison to look at to say, okay, well, last time it was down about this much. It doesn't look like there's any comparison for this. So your guess is as good as mine here. You know, like what percentage of the country are in the Mountain and Pacific time zones, and then figure how much of a percentage is it going to cause on the rating. I don't know. 10 to 20%. What do you got?
So yeah, the NHL on TNT schedule be at 10 o'clock Eastern is that Flyers Oilers. And I believe Edmonton is a Mountain time zone. So that would make a lot of sense.
Yes. And we could talk to here about, the TV ratings that the NHL has been doing. What I have here. Yeah. So the NHL has had now its first, broadcasts on TNT. And what we're showing on the screen now are all the original telecasts, for the month of October through the 21st of October. So that's through last Thursday. This is ranked by PTN 49. This is everything that has made the daily top 150 for TNT in these 21 days. And I guess that I'm guessing this is the very first, NHL game on TNT at 7:40 PM on the 13th, which was a Wednesday. Does that make sense? Yeah. Which did a 0.32. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tweeted about this. It did a 0.32. This is the Rangers and the Capitals, if I remember right. definitely says Rangers here, did a 0.32 in the demo in Dynamite's time slot, which is lower than what Dynamite usually does on Wednesday. The previous Wednesday, where it did a fairly low rating for what it does normally, did a 0.37 on the 6th. That's Dynamite. So again, a 0.37 for Dynamite on the 6th following week, preempted NHL in its place. Very similar time slot, a little bit earlier, a little bit later than Dynamite, 0.32. And we also have some other NHL airings here on TNT that had 0.17, a 0.17, another one at 10, did a 0.15. Suffice to say, Dynamite does better ratings in the demo, and I think even in total viewership than the NHL does. We might have talked about this last week, but nonetheless, the NHL is getting the preferential treatment when it comes to the time slot, both in terms of preempting Dynamite out of its slot. Yeah, I know Dynamite's on its way to TBS in January, but NHL clearly is the favorite child here. They get the preference for the time slot. And when it comes to what's going to happen on Wednesday, they're pushing the Pacific and Mountain time zones, into, I guess you'd call that a preemption. So a little bit later. But again, the NHL is probably more valuable as a property in terms of ad rates and perhaps in terms of the carriage fees that it can drive for Turner. Any thoughts on that? Cause I have a chart that I want to show.
Well, I mean, when you bring up just it being more of an attractive to advertisers, that really is one of the big things that's haunted wrestling forever is when it comes to it, at least top four sports is going to have advertisers better advertising rates. So your NFL, your college football, college basketball, NBA, NHL, and MLB, they're all going to have better advertisements. I don't know how the secondary sports go as far as when it comes to like tennis and golf and like car racing. I imagine NASCAR. Well, NASCAR might have similar because it's definitely similar markets in a lot of ways.
So I've been trying to build a spreadsheet that I will continue to work on. But I'm putting together sort of what are the current and recent deals for sports TV rights fees. And what we have for the NHL on Turner is they're getting a $225 million deal on an average annual basis. With Disney / ESPN, it's $400 million on an average annual basis. I'm doing sort of a rough count of the number of games they're getting for this per year. And this is including playoffs. Turner is getting about 114 games. ESPN is getting about 118 games. So a way I want to think about this is if you divide that per game, per episode, right? You're getting about $2 million per game. Turner is paying about $2 million per NHL game. And ESPN is paying about $3 million per game. Yes.
I think that's skewed a little bit, though, because a lot... So you have your ESPN on it, NHL and ESPN games, but then they're also putting games up on ESPN Plus.
I think they're mainly putting games in ESPN Plus, isn't that?
Okay.
That's kind of what I read. Somebody who knows more about what's happening there could correct us. That's what I read is I don't know that they're primarily even airing on ESPN. Maybe they already have.
I did watch opening night. They had like the Seattle Kraken versus Las Vegas, and then I think it was Pittsburgh.
Is this the first season for the Seattle Kraken?
Yes.
Is this a brand new expansion team, or is this a team that moved?
This is a brand new expansion team.
Seattle has never had an NHL team.
Like 100-something years ago, they did.
Did Seattle exist 100-something years ago? So anyway, what I wanted to think about and compare here, it looks like about $2 million per game for, regardless of whether these games are on ESPN, the mothership, or ESPN Plus, it's still this much money, this many games, right?
Yes. And then, you're all right. It's a primarily ESPN Plus package, but it looks like on Tuesdays, at least this upcoming week, there is a game on ESPN, which is Vegas and Colorado.
What's the Las Vegas hockey team?
The Golden Knights. They really support that hockey team out there. They believe it or not, it's being on Vegas. They've been seeing it. Like people really love their Golden Knights hockey, and I think a lot of it is to do with it was the first professional sports team, like major league sports team, in the city
before the Raiders.
Yes, they were before the Raiders. Yeah.
So But anyway, yeah. When I stopped playing video games, this is the extent of my sports knowledge. Whenever I stopped playing sports video games. So 2 million per NHL game on TNT, roughly. And maybe there's shoulder programming involved in this, but I think we can get something out of this. This has something to do. 3 million per game, per NHL game on ESPN. Per episode of AEW on TNT. Now I'm just saying Dynamite. You could say, you could double this. Is it 52 weeks? There's 104 weeks now because again, I got Rampage. But anyway, if we just say, let's say per week, okay, 52 weeks in a year per week, it's just over $800,000. I got this rounded over here in this column. If you're looking at this on video, I've got this rounded to the nearest million. But even if you say a million, it's still, you know, the NHL properties are still, they're paying on a per game / per week / per episode basis twice as much for the NHL, which is probably reflected in values, in value somehow, and probably ad fees and probably what they think or are getting, via carriage fees for being able to broadcast NHL games.
All right.
And if you, we're going to move back should, to- real quick, we should mention, well, how does WWE compare in that sort of per week, per episode breakdown? 4 million for SmackDown, 5 million for Raw. So in a sense, Raw and SmackDown are more valuable, are more expensive than the NHL on a per game basis with at least this methodology. So it raises the question, well, if Turner was paying more, and let's say we're 4 years from now, where perhaps Turner is paying more in the next round or whatever. Let's say Turner re-signs the deal and with a major upgrade for AEW. Let's say 4x. Now we're at like 4 million per episode for AEW or per week for AEW. And maybe then the preemption story is different. I don't know. But it's all kind of moot, I guess, because Dynamite's probably going to go to TBS. And I mean, it's going to go to TBS and probably stay there. But Rampage is going to stay on TNT, where it's probably immune from preemption. Moving on.
All right. Yeah. So moving on, we're going to go back to the rings report and talk about Monday Night Raw. So this past Monday, October 18th, 1.59 million with a 0.39 in the 18 to 49. That's down slightly from the 11th with 1.58 and 0.42. But here, looking at your trends here, Brandon, over 4 weeks, the 18 to 49 has gone down 19%. And now Monday Night Football obviously is probably the biggest cause of that. But that's a very huge dip for the 18 to 49.
It's been a preponderance of sports telecasts happening right now. I heard someone say, Brandon Ross on the Late Show podcast, in fact, this is one or two of the days recently, maybe more than one, is one of the very few times in history where there has been games that are not preseason or exhibition games all on the same day for the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and baseball, all broadcast on the same day. So this is not normal sports competition that they're facing. Nonetheless, we can say that if we, where I'm looking in the spreadsheet now, I'm going to sort the Raw P1849 ratings that we have from smallest to largest. And what we will find is that this was the smallest 18 to 49 audience in the history, probably in the history of Monday Night Raw. 514,000 viewers. Again, that comes out to a 0.39 demo rating. A demo rating that AEW has surpassed on a handful of occasions. The lowest ever. I only have demo 1849 viewership numbers going back to 2011. I can't imagine there was a lower number than this even in the early 90s. But if that information is out there, hopefully someone would pass it along. But most likely, this is the lowest in the demo ever. We'll probably be up this week, but I don't know. There's probably still going to be baseball competition, right? There's still going to be, if anything, the World Series coming up. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if they can go lower than this.
Yeah, let's look at the World Series TV schedule because I think it does matter what's going on here this week.
But with the West Coast and Mountain Time preemptions, Raw will probably avoid a unfavorable comparison against Dynamite this week. I would guess, just to take a random sort of guess, something in the low 0.30 range for Dynamite, something in the high 0.30 range for Raw. So Raw is probably safe from that comparison this week.
They're going to get lucky for Raw because there will be no World Series games on Monday with the schedule. We're looking at Tuesday night for game one, Wednesday night for game two, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday for game three, four, and five, and then Tuesday and Wednesday of next week for six and seven.
Okay. So, but there's still obviously Monday Night Football. Is there NBA? Yes. Is there NBA on Monday? Probably not. Monday's not an NBA night. There's no, unless it was the playoffs or something, right?
Yeah, not a main network night, I'm sure, like for the NBA League Pass and stuff, but. All right. And I don't know if you want to kind of talk about where Raw is in the original telecast for the top 150.
Sure. We can talk. So just how we looked at TNT earlier. And by the way, Rose to the Top is sort of in the middle or lower half of the middle of these programs. There's a few dozen of them here. Rose to the Top, we'll talk about it later. It's only a 6-episode season, I guess. So I think they just aired their season finale last night or something. I did watch quite a bit of it. Have you watched an episode of Rose to the Top yet?
I've only seen a clip or two. A friend of ours was on the clip, Kevin Bennett, and I joked that I was going to announce him as seen on Rose to the Top. Yeah. Kevin Bennett. Right.
Rose to the Top superstar. How did he end up on Rose to the Top?
So Brandy's next to Leva Bates talking to a couple people, and like he's in like the background, like laughing at whatever joke she made next to Luther.
So I'm watching this episode last night, and this is centering around the Cody taking his boots off after the match with Malakai Black, retiring afterwards, having this conversation with Tony Khan in the room where they have the couch that has the same pillows that my couch has. And Cody acting like he's going to stay out longer than maybe they had previously discussed. I can't tell to what extent this is a work or not, or if they're just, it very much strikes me as a reality. I know everybody's going to say, well, all reality shows are sort of predetermined and scripted, but I don't know how much is, enhanced for TV or not. But anyway, the USA Network programs, where are they? Here they are. The top three cable originals. I don't know about reruns. Can't tell you about Law and Order or the NCIS replays. But WWE Entertainment are the top three. I consolidated the 3 hours because I know Nielsen reports one row for 1 hour, but I averaged them all up. I spent hours in Python this week. People don't know how much time I spend in Python. Do you know what Python is, Chris Gullo? Do you even know what Python is?
You've talked a lot about it to me, but it's from what I understand, it's a program where you can kind of put data together, and it's a
language.
Very high artificial intelligence with data.
Actually, maybe it is a program too, but it's definitely a language. And then I guess there's a program too that you use to execute the code that you write. But yeah, anyway, with a lot of work and trouble and just working out bugs, this is what it looks like. The top three programs on USA in the demo, or total viewership for that matter, are Monday Night Raw. After that, we've got Chrisley Knows Best. After that, we've got the Premier League. Even more Chrisley Knows Best. There is an episode of Chucky that tied NXT in the demo. Not the episode that was immediately following NXT. What am I trying to say here? The Chucky episode, which I think is the first Chucky episode on the 12th, right?
The second episode was this past week, so.
Right. So the first one was on the 12th, did a 0.13 demo. Its lead in NXT that same night did a 0.15. So the bigger program NXT did serve as a lead in for Chucky, but cutting it close.
We'll talk about Chucky when we talk about the NXT rating.
Okay.
You know what I'm alluding to, but
anyway, the moral of the story, why I prepared these tables today. And this is another table here. I don't know how easy this is to read because it's a fairly big table. But this is September 2021, the entire month, the top cable originals. When you exclude NFL and college football, NFL and college football dominates cable. So what I did was I just excluded all the cable, or I'm sorry, all the college and all the NFL programs that I could. This might not be perfect, but this was my attempt at it. And to say, all right, you exclude football, again, pro and college, what's leading on cable? And it's The Walking Dead, Rick and Morty, and wrestling. That's what's dominating this list. And more wrestling than the others. You know, just to read off, let's say the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or so. Raw, Dynamite, Walking Dead, Raw, Walking Dead, 90 Day Fiancé, AEW Dynamite. And I'm going to go further. There's two episodes of Rick and Morty. So, I know there's some people who are concerned about is wrestling's popularity declining. Well, WWE's popularity has declined on a really macro basis over the last 4 or 5 years. I think there's a preponderance of metrics that will tell you that. Not saying anything about their financial state, which is in the opposite direction, thanks to the value of their media rights fees. But what's dominating cable? What's doing really well on cable other than football right now? And if we were looking at the entire month of October, year to date, we would see a lot of baseball, as we see right here. Is this, okay. We see a lot of baseball. We see some NBA. And then we start to see The Walking Dead, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and WWE, 90 Day Fiancé, Raw. This wouldn't include SmackDown because SmackDown's broadcast, but then Dynamite. So, and the NHL doesn't even show up until we've seen a couple episodes of Raw and one episode of Dynamite in a month where Dynamite was only in its regular time slot one time so far. Moral of the story is wrestling does really well on cable, both WWE and AEW. Wrestling may or may not be getting more popular. WWE has gotten less popular since about 2016 or 17. Maybe it's at least stabilizing now. Maybe it's growing, whatever. But wrestling does really well on cable, and wrestling's media rights values have never been in a better place. Wrestling's never really been in a better place financially in terms of being efficient.
Question I have for you, Brandon, as we're talking about this is, you know, you bring up cable. Well, we do have the national telecast, 18 to 49 on Fox. And how does SmackDown, how does wrestling on a broadcast network?
That's right. Our producers did prepare that as well. So Fox is a more challenging network to compare yourself to other programs in. Fox is in far more homes, and Fox is probably, you know, just spending more aggressively. And guess what dominates Fox in October? Of course, it's football. So we've got lots of Sunday football. There have been simulcasts of Thursday football. But I think there's more that makes this list than what we're showing right now. We're showing something like 20 or 30 slots here, and two episodes of SmackDown finish in the lower half. But it does better than all but football, of course. An episode of The Simpsons that had an NFL lead-in. The Masked Singer, an ALCS game. 9-1-1, don't know what that is, but I see it in the rankings all the time. An episode of The Great North. A lot of these Sunday programs, though, you'll notice a lot of these non-football programs are also on Sunday because they probably had an NFL lead-in. Big Noon Saturday, that's college football pregame, I think. And Bob's Burgers, also a Sunday program at 9, probably had an NFL audience lead in. So SmackDown does pretty well too. Maybe Fox is a little bit disappointed in the ratings that SmackDown is producing, but relative to other programming, wrestling does really well. And I think it's still, obviously I'm not a witness to negotiations or anything, but best I can tell, wrestling is still a really good value, especially compared to what you would have to replace it with, which would be, you know, in most cases, scripted programming that would be, you know, and would be 2 hours long in the case of SmackDown. And that would cost several million dollars to replace. But wrestling is giving you a pretty good rating for, you know, in the case of SmackDown, like $4 million an episode, which is a pretty good deal.
And just to answer your question on 911, it is a drama that focuses on first responders, dispatchers, and it's starring Angela Bassett and Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Doesn't CBS or some other broadcast network have like a, they do the police, the EMTs, and the fire all in the same
Chicago.
Block?
Chicago, that's right. Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago Blue. I think it's Chicago PD. That's what. Yes.
I bet P50 Plus loves that.
Well, they love their Blue Bloods. We know this.
That's true. I think this is what I've always thought should be the case. I think you should, on the Patreon, of course, this has got to be monetized. You should do a review of all these other programs that we talk about peripherally and tell us how good they are.
And it's kind of funny. It maybe just shows how my tastes are. The current like cable programs that I watch, we never discuss. they're never even the talk. I watch What We Do in the Shadows and American Horror Story and Curb Your Enthusiasm. We just never hear about Cinemax? No, What We Do in the Shadows is FX.
Have you watched Squid Game?
I have not. My wife has. I watched a little bit of it when she was watching it.
Squid Game soundtrack.
Yes.
The other day. Yes. I have watched Squid Game.
Yeah, it's very well received from what I hear. I mean, I watched a little bit of it when she was watching it, but
extremely violent. But very interesting. Very interesting.
Put a dollar. All right. So moving back onto the ratings.
There's more ratings.
NXT. 606,000 the P2 plus with a 0.49 and 18-49. That's down from last week with 630 in the P2, 0.15 and 18-49. Pretty much no change in 18-49 over the last 4 weeks, with your statistics here. So this is next week. This is where I wanted to talk about it. Next week's the Halloween Havoc episode.
Yes.
And good old crossover on the USA Network, Chucky. Is going to be on NXT.
Are you serious?
Yes. Dead serious. And if he does not do a segment with Bron Breakker, I think it's just, why do it? Why do it then?
This is like the TV gods trying to send a message. Trying to tell you something.
I felt like you were speechless for a minute.
For people may not know, what is the significance of Chucky in the wrestling lore?
And this is where people and I myself always had the belief that this was a Vince Russo thing in WCW, but no, this was before Vince Russo. This was Eric Bischoff in charge.
Really?
Yes. I thought so too, but then going back and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And basically Chucky interrupted Rick Steiner.
Is this like in 1999 this happened?
Yes. Chucky interrupted Rick Steiner and popped up on an episode of Nitro and Rick got really mad, and then we never saw anything from him ever again.
Chucky,
October 12th, 1998.
Yeah, you're seeing the same thing I am.
Wow. That's when they're just on top of the world.
That's before Goldberg drops the title to Nash at Starrcade. Goldberg is the man right at that moment. And remember, like, Chucky is like, come on. He's like challenging him from a video screen.
Yeah, calling him a chump or something.
It's, oh man, this is one of those things that like you can see people don't know wrestling, but are like executives thinking this is a great idea. Integration, wow, cross promotion, oh, awesome idea. All right, go, take care of it. You figure it out. I don't know.
Chucky should probably be in the WWE Hall of Fame then, because this should be a second celebrity appearance. Usually, it takes two, and then you're in. Celebrity wing, Chucky. Okay. Aria, anything else we want to talk about NXT?
No, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be meaningful to see whether this can pop a rating. Halloween Havoc last year did a really nice rating for NXT relative to what it had been doing in the surrounding weeks. It was its highest number for a long time after, and maybe it's... I would have to look. But it did a really good rating. Will this do anything? Do people care enough to tune in beyond the normal audience? I've had the NXT on. That's what I'm going to refer to it as, the NXT. And it's, I definitely haven't watched it closely. I've heard there's some green people in the ring. I don't have much hope for this version of NXT. The median age, which we can show on the screen. The explicit purpose of this program, the explicit intent, is for this to attract a younger audience. I've heard that. Other people have heard that and reported it. If we look at median age, let's go 100%. That's what the median age looks like over the last six, I don't know, 5 months or so. And who's got the oldest program of the six programs that we track across WWE, AEW, and Impact Wrestling? NXT. Has it gotten younger since NXT 2.0? No. It's gotten older. Because, it's not a program that's especially interesting to young people. I think the old version of NXT had its own issues, but, this isn't a remedy. I mean, you can quantify that.
As far as Halloween Havoc, what would draw people in? You got Ciampa versus Bron Breakker, Raquel Gonzalez versus Mandy Rose for the women's championship and the Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal match. Tag titles, MSK and Imperium.
Bill Watts. I think if we're going to go to Bruce Pritchard and whatnot and relaunch this thing, why not just what's Bill doing these days? Just, you know, this seems like a job that he'd be up to.
Jerry Jarrett, call Jerry Jarrett up.
Yeah, and at least, you know, I don't know if there's any torch talks that Jerry Jarrett looks bad in, but maybe he's a better option than Bill Watts.
And then just the MSK versus Imperium, and a mystery superstar will be unveiled or whatever. So whatever that means. So that's what they're trying to draw people in.
There it is.
There it is.
What is happening?
It's crossover.
All right, moving on.
All right. We don't have really, we already talked about the Dynamite rating with the 727,000.28. We talked about the Roads at the Top recap, but it did 340. Well, this is October 16th, 340,000 with 0.14 and 18 to 49. Impact. This was the go home show for Bound for Glory. Did 93,000 with a 0.02 and 18 to 49. So, up in the P2 from 89 last week, which was, you know, one of their lowest, but 18 to 49 down because they were 0.03. Yeah.
And look at the comparisons on the far right versus the last four. It's pretty.
Yeah. 42% in 18 to 49.
I mean, with Impact, I always say you've got a much smaller audience than the other programs we talk about. This sample is going to be very volatile, but yeah, Impact ratings have not been good lately. This was something like the fourth lowest Impact total viewership ever. They were going against a lot of sports competition, including, I can look here, Thursday, they were going against a football game, of course, on both Fox and the NFL Network. They're going against the NLCS game at 8 on TBS. An NBA game at 10 was the Clippers and the Warriors, so that was not competing. But there was a Mavericks-Hawks game that did a 0.42 in the demo. I think there might have been NHL here, too, but it wasn't. Okay. Anyway, a lot of competition. And I'm trying to do these measurements too. I don't know if you've seen this, Gull. These are in the Patreon sometimes lately. This chart right here where I'm trying to count up all of the competition that occurred in the slot from 8 to 10 and saying, well, how strong was the competition? This is what it's intended to do, is measure how strong the competition was for a given week versus what's happened in the recent past. And this was on the stronger side for sure.
All right. And we'll see, they have been hyping it up. Minoru Suzuki is coming to Impact. So we'll see if those episodes maybe do any. What's up?
Who is Minoru Suzuki going to wrestle?
They have not said. They've just been airing vignettes that he's coming to Impact. Him and Josh Alexander would be good. Yeah. Josh Alexander was the Impact champion for about 1 minute last night. Spoilers. Yes.
He won the title from Christian and then immediately lost it to Moose.
Yes, because Moose won the Call Your Shot gauntlet earlier in the night. So it's basically a Money in the Bank type deal.
Not a big fan of Money in the Bank.
No. But, by the way, Kiss, the Kiss Demon came back last night.
Right. Chucky is coming and the Kiss Demon is back.
It's Halloween, man.
This might be a dream.
All the spooky characters. All the spooky characters are coming back.
Yeah, nobody's doing anything with the RoboCop IP right now. That's probably on the cheap side.
TK. Didn't Sting's right have there, him at a StarCast?
Who owns the RoboCop IP? Does Warner Media own that?
I think so. But if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, didn't Conrad Thompson get RoboCop to be the Starcast? Yes. The yes. He was with Sting. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see, I've been, I guess, watching the commercials more closely lately, that the movie Spencer about Princess Diana, that was being advertised during at least Rampage on Friday, which was intriguing to me. Like, I know very little about how advertisements ultimately get placed. It wouldn't jump to mind to me if I was going to expect a movie to be advertised during, during Rampage, that it would be this, you know, award, this possibly award-winning, award-nominated movie about Princess Diana. Prestige.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit surprising placement, but, you know, this is, there's very similar programming to that, The Crown on Netflix, which is extremely popular, so maybe they're you know, hoping they think that they just blast it.
It does Warner Media, does this like Warner Brothers movie? It doesn't look to be. Like, does Warner Media have a stake in this? And that's kind of, oh yeah, well, it ended up on a Turn Network. But no, it doesn't look like it to me. To mine, best I can. Anyway, we're an hour into this thing. We've not even started talking about New Japan yet.
No. Well, we'll finish off with Dark Side of the Ring here. The XPW episode, the Rob Black XPW episode, 109,000 in the P2+, with a .05 in 18 to 49. That is down from 135 in the P2+, and a .06 in 18 to 49. And down, even though Rob Black projected it while also tagging you on Twitter that it was going to be the highest viewed in the demo of all the Dark Side of the Rings.
Yes.
And it was not.
It was not. Where did it place?
So pull it up here. If we look, so in total viewership, it was last, and in the 18 to 49, as well as it was last.
The FMW episode in the demo was lower.
Oh, okay. All right. So yeah. Okay.
But it looks like this was. At least it was roughly tied for the second lowest, at least in a demo rating. I do have this by viewers. I think it may be like the third lowest in the demo out of the, what is this, 20 some odd episodes, probably 20, 30 episodes that there have been of the series so far in its history since 2019.
We've talked about the narrative is the second half of, Dark Side of this season is not really performed well. I don't see any major changes, but. I wonder if next year's topics will be more mainstream because my theory is we'll see. I mean,
They're on Thursday. They have, like we just discussed with Impact, they were going against a lot of sports competition in this entire latter half of the season was September onward. So it was all going against the NFL as Golo shows us his forehead.
Oh, sorry. I was just trying to see if they've ever actually ran in the fall before. And this might be the first time.
No,
looking at the episodes.
It's April, May, March, April, May, June, September.
So that makes a lot of sense. I don't know how many more episodes we have left of this year. It might just be the steroid trial.
Next week is, this is it. This is it. Vince McMahon.
Okay.
Versus the world. By the way, I think we have someone on the line here.
I am a victim.
There he is. He's next. Vince. The steroid trial is next, the 1994 Vincent Kennedy McMahon versus the United States.
All right. You think it's time to switch gears a little bit here, Brandon?
Sure.
And we'll get you right into it. A state of the update to the business of New Japan Pro Wrestling. A very interesting year for New Japan Pro Wrestling as COVID affected Japan probably more than it did the States over here is being more lockdowns and outbreaks just based on what they thought was, you know, a dangerous surge in COVID rates. So the business not normal. We've seen a lot of New Japan talents over in the States this year. I think more than most years, especially with the New Japan Strong program, been doing a lot of tapings on that. So it's been a very interesting year for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Also the Roku deal, which we'll talk about in a second too.
Yeah, we'll kind of run through this, but I do have to thank Evan Deadly Sins W on Twitter the New Japan expert, for pointing out to me, this is not exactly new information. This information that we're going to go through here is a couple months old, at least. But as people may know, New Japan Pro Wrestling is a subsidiary of Bushiroad, which is a larger entertainment and media company. They do a lot of stuff with anime. They are also the owners of Stardom as of a year or two ago. I don't really know well what all their businesses are, but they have a lot of different businesses, and New Japan is a relatively small part of it, less than majority. So, but what we do end up learning every year, through the New Japan website, there's always like this URL on the New Japan website that shows its balance sheet, which doesn't tell us what their revenue was, but it does tell us what their net income is. And we are showing what their net income is on the screen right now. By the way, New Japan has changed its fiscal year. So its fiscal year until most recently was ending in July. Now their fiscal year, and I think this is for all of Bushiroad, is ending in June. So this is a slightly out of whack. But net income for New Japan in the fiscal year ending the 12 months ending June 2021. So this is before the G1 climax for what it's worth. But for those 12 months, the net income was, in U.S. dollars, of course, they're dealing in Japanese yen, but I've converted this to U.S. dollars, about $60,000. I think it actually comes out to like $55,000. So, for context, last year, in the year ending July 2020, so that's, what is that, like about four months of COVID in that year, last year, about $1.85 million in net income. Net income is profit, basically. It is, after all the taxes and everything, this is what you got left. So $1.85 million in that year, and in the year before that, totally before COVID, $4.35 million. Year before that, 4.9. So this is a quite profitable company. We don't know revenue. We do know revenue. We don't know revenue for the last couple of years. They used to publish that on New Japan's official website. They have stopped doing that since COVID, probably for reasons, because revenue is probably substantially lower. But suffice to say, it looks like New Japan made basically no money in the 12 months ending June 2021. But they at least didn't lose money. I don't know if there's any government assistance involved in this or any government loans or whatever like we've had here in the United States. But New Japan didn't lose money, but it didn't make any money. But they're doing okay enough in a really challenging time. I wanted to look to, at the number of events that they've been running. They're running more events. So this is in calendar years that we're looking at now. 182 events in the full year of 2020. I'm starting to question whether that's correct. Maybe I'm including some canceled events in here. Anyway, I'll check on that later. I don't want to pull up a spreadsheet right now, but, so anyway, total attendance, though, we can talk about it. We know that New Japan has been at limited capacity since what they did was they stopped running events at the very end of February 2020. COVID hit to the Eastern Hemisphere countries before it hit the Western Hemisphere countries, so they were dealing with it a bit earlier. So they did not run throughout March 2020 to the middle of July 2020. Total attendance in 2019, that full calendar year, was 464,000. That's according to the official website. Everything after the middle of 2015 seemed to be attendances that are close to reality. I would guess that this is not paid attendance. I would guess that you knock off about 10% of these numbers to get paid attendance, roughly. In any event, this is useful for comparison. 464,000 in the final year before COVID, and it had been growing on an annual basis for 4 years in a row before that. Nice, strong growth. And of course, in 2020, it falls in half, more than in half, to 227,000. And in the full year, not the full year, but through October so far, we're at 156,000. So they might not make it to 2020's number, but then again, 2020's number has January and February that are normal pre-COVID years. This is a table that probably wouldn't make for good audio to go through that shows what the trends are month by month. And then we have average attendance, and average attendance, of course, has been down too. So in 2020, maybe we'll just talk about 2021, 1,170 attendees is the average attendance. That would include things like the Wrestle Kingdom events. So that's just to give you an idea of what how many people they're putting in the building. In 2019, they were averaging 2,730. Why is this asking to be updated? Oh, wow. This is median. So these numbers would be strongly skewed by the Wrestle Kingdom attendance. So if we do a median instead of an average and just think about what's the typical New Japan attendance like, 1,700 in 2019, about the same year before that in 18, and now it's down to just under 700. So more than falling in half is, under their limited capacity during COVID, where we still don't have fans cheering. I'll jump ahead to these just to look at what's the state of COVID in Japan versus other countries where there's lots of wrestling cases. So what we have on the screen right now are the daily new confirmed cases per capita for the UK, United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, Mexico, Japan. And guess who's the lowest? Japan. Guess who's the most restrictive on wrestling events?
Japan.
Japan. That's cases. I mean, deaths are different. Now deaths are the lowest for Japan, too, out of those countries. But maybe deaths aren't what you should look at. What you should really look at is excess deaths, is what people say. Well, Japan's neck and neck with Australia in that category for the lowest. This data is not available for Mexico, for whatever reason. And then vaccinations, people are vaccinated in Japan, more so than the United States at this point. U.S. is about 55% fully vaccinated. Canada has the world's most intelligent people. They are the leading country out of these. They are over 70% fully vaccinated. And number two,
they waited long enough.
Canada did.
Yeah, they waited a long time to be eligible for vaccinations because remember they had a very they didn't have enough for a long time while we were all getting them down here.
Right. I remember hearing that there was a problem with access to vaccines in Japan, but here's Japan is past the UK now for percentage of the population fully vaccinated. So this is not like people vaccinated. This is all different populations. This is percentage of the population vaccinated. So it's just, I'm not really making a judgment here, I don't think, but like it's remarkable that you have Japan that is more vaccinated than the United States, lower deaths per capita, way lower deaths per capita, way lower cases per capita, way lower excess mortality. Yet we still have New Japan with limited capacity, people wearing masks, clapping only, cheer in your hearts. Meanwhile, in the United States, full capacity. Yeah, wear your mask, but I don't think anybody's getting thrown out for, pulling their mask down and screaming at the top of their lungs. So that's remarkable. So what we have to look at also are some slides from the Bushiroad investor presentation showing. I think a good question here is, well, how's Bushiroad doing? Is the parent company of New Japan and Stardom, is it profitable? And, it lost a little bit of money in the fiscal year of 2021. This is in yen. So I don't know what the conversion is off the top of my head. Can you convert this 280 million yen to US dollars?
Okay. Let's see here.
While you look that up, revenue is fairly stable for Bushiroad. They're down to, what is this? I don't even know how to say these numbers. 32,000 million yen. Go ahead.
It is 2.46 million in US. So
they lost They lost about $2.5 million in the 11 months ended June 2021. Whereas they were before, they were making 1.5 billion yen. How much is that?
Let's see here.
I would play the Jeopardy music, but I don't want to get demonetized.
That would be 13.2 million US dollars.
So they went from $13.2 million in what they call profit to a $2.5 million loss. So the sports department, which at this point I understand is only New Japan and Stardom. I mentioned earlier, we don't know what the revenue is for New Japan, but this gives us a pretty good indication here. This is by quarter, but if we look at this by thought I had this by year. This is my quarter. And this is more of a thing by quarter. Okay, but if we look at this by quarter, the yellow, the sports division was making 1,500 million yen. So I guess that's 1.5 billion yen, right? But now in Q4, that's only 2 months, but the revenues in these, in Q3 and Q4 2020, that's fiscal year. So I'm guessing that's the earliest part of the pandemic, where revenues fell substantially from 1.8 billion yen down to 976 billion yen, 772 million yen, but then grew back up almost to where they were, in 2019. But there's an interesting tidbit in here. Is it on this slide? No, it's not. So I'm going to ask you, Riscolo, how many subscribers do you think New Japan World has?
Oh, I don't know. I would say, let's say maybe 100,000.
Good guess. So this slide, can you read this slide? Can you actually read it? Do you see, can you be able to see it? See the words?
It's blurry for me, but I believe I have that on the slide.
Do you need WrestleOnics headquarters to, or are you a monitor, an external monitor?
I think we're okay. I have this graph though, the quarterly trend of net sales by department.
So what it says here is number of paid. This is, when is this from? This is what the
yes, I can read that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and read it.
Yeah, number of paid subscribers of the video streaming service in New Japan Pro Wrestling World reached 116,000, the highest ever.
Yes. There had been reports, and I think I've even put this in one of my annual reports, 120,000. So that's, I think I call those estimates, fortunately. 116,000 as of January. So probably fell after January, given January is the month that contains Wrestle Kingdom, which is by far their biggest event. Or we should say events at this point of the year. So it's probably lower than I would guess. I would guess it's lower than 116,000 now, but that's the peak, 116,000 subscribers, which is interesting, because everything I can tell, and maybe New Japan Strong is helping, but is that their U.S. interest or their non-Japan interest, their international interest is really diminished. And I also wanted to pull this up too. If we can bring the Google Trends in here, this is worldwide. We should probably look at this in terms of Japan too. If I just duplicate this and type Japan in here, Japan seems to be stable. And the stream, I've got tons of tabs going here, but I think the stream is holding up just fine now that we have supercomputers involved. So if we look at Japan, obviously there's this huge dip here. What's the bottom of it is May. That's in the middle of COVID for them, they're not running events portion of COVID. But after that, it picks back up to basically where it was before in Japan. In the United States, though, we see this peak in January 2018, and the trend basically goes down after that. And I think the key event here is AEW taking away Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, who were really big players in driving international interest in New Japan. And I think they have a portion of a crowd. I mean, just like we saw all the diminished interest in wrestling in the U.S. when there weren't crowds. There are crowds, but there's crowds that can only clap. So it's not the full experience. And maybe I'm projecting my own taste and response here, but I have very little interest in watching New Japan right now, knowing that it's clap crowds. I mean, credit to them for being safe, but in terms of like feeling like I have to watch it, I don't.
And I mean, I think so. An interesting business strategy that New Japan has been doing is, and maybe they're trying to re-spark that international interest, is they have been kind of doubling down on working relationships in the United States and just being in the United States in general. We've saw New Japan Strong, and they did TV tapings in Long Beach and as well as Philadelphia and Dallas. And they also did the Resurgence event in Los Angeles at the Torch. And, you know, and we've seen over, you know, the last 6 months or so, we've seen Suzuki everywhere, it seems like. But we've also seen Hukulo and El Phantasmo and Jay White and just and the list goes on and on and on. There's been probably a dozen or so New Japan Pro talents that have been appearing not only on television shows, but also on independents like Game Changer and Defy and others, like West Coast Pro, for example.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is something they're just trying to get these guys more work because they know they're not running as many shows as possible, but.
Yeah. Moving on to what else we have to go through here. This is just not a pie graph, but this is a donut graph showing that the sports department, which again includes New Japan and Stardom, constituted in fiscal year 2020, 15% of the Bushiroad business, and in 2021, 11 months ended, 14%. So to give you an idea of how big of a piece is pro wrestling out of the big Bushiroad business, it's about 14%. Maybe it'll be more when events can have full capacity again, and they can drive some more ticket revenue and other revenues as well. Just to jump through these, it's always informative to look at who they're putting on their slides. We actually get some wrestlers who appear on some Bushiroad slides. We have, they're celebrating the viewing environment in Japan. We've got an image of Tanahashi, and then this image has Ibushi, Tanahashi, Okada, Naito, and Hiromu. We've got Jay White over here in a group with Okada, Tanahashi, and Naito. We've got about Zack Sabre Jr. making it onto the Roku channel along with Jay White, Okada, Ibushi, and Naito. They're putting over that they are in 1 million households weekly. 1 million households weekly view two domestic terrestrial broadcast programs. One is a BS program, which is a broadcast system, which is, I think, satellite TV. In April 2021, a combative channel, I think it's combative sports channel, Amoeba started relay broadcasting of New Japan wrestling, pro wrestling matches. I think these are written by someone who's not a first language English speaker. But the Roku channel, tell me what you think of this pitch for Roku. The Roku channel, an American major streaming service provider with more than 40 million users. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah. Yes. And also, too, at the end of the day, you know, the Roku channel and the Roku platform are two completely different things in the aspect of you're trying to sell it. Like, yeah, there might be 40 million Rokus because people are watching Netflix and HBO Max and Peacock. And
you don't have to, by the way, you don't have to have a Roku device to be a Roku household.
No, you have to have the Roku, like Roku app, you're saying?
That's yeah, like I can watch Roku right now. I don't have a Roku in my home. I can go to the Roku website and watch it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Computer.
I don't know how I would put it on my TV because I don't think it's on it. I have Apple TVs, so I don't think it's on Apple TV because they probably don't want to play with Apple TV. But anyway.
But the Roku channel is not like the popularity of people just getting. I own a Roku and I can tell you I very rarely watch the Roku channel.
Yes.
It's a lot of old programming, old movies. And I've honestly watched the first episode of the New Japan Pro Wrestling. That's it.
Because it's all, it's quite delayed by months, right?
It's a lot of archived footage, yeah.
Right. It's some place to watch some of the library, which is better than nothing. Better than what they had before they made this Roku deal. But if they're really going to grow internationally or specifically in the United States, they really need to get on linear television. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Just, you know, I know we don't want to go down too hard down this rabbit hole, though, but I mean, why would they have a hard, I'm surprised that maybe they've just turned down deals, that they would have a hard time to get on linear television in the States, just based on how much wrestling TV we have right now. Like, you know, MLW and Impact and, you know, Dark Side of the Ring and, you know, Ring of Honor, all this, and they can't get on even like MLW a secondary network.
That New Japan should be able to at this point.
Yes, even if it's a secondary network like BN Sports, which MLW started, like the surprise is they can't even get on something like that.
My speculation would be that MLW is working much harder and more effectively at media distribution, at least in this market being the U.S., than Japan is or is equipped to do. Even though New Japan and MLW are on different stratospheres as wrestling businesses.
We'll see who gets a US TV deal first. Will it be New Japan, the NWA, or surprisingly Game Changer Wrestling?
Or none of the
above. That will be the... What did you say?
Or none of the above.
none of the above, yes.
Then we have this slide. It's more of the same, but we have a Stardom appearance here, celebrating Stardom's first event at Nippon Budokan. We have Julia and Tam Nakano. They fought in the main event match. Just, they've got a photo of that, of this, and mentioning that it drew 3,318 spectators at the Budokan. And they have another event, or they had, I guess this is before the event happened. They're having another event at Yokohama Budokan on April 4th. Budokan holds well over 10,000. This is also where the G1 Climax finals were. I should probably go to the Budokan someday. Budokan is, I'm a big All Japan the 90s fan. Are you familiar with the Budokan, Colo?
Yes, I'm familiar with the lineage and everything of it.
A lot of live albums were recorded there.
If, depending on how the COVID restrictions are there in next, the plan is for me to go to Japan next year.
Really?
Around this time. Yeah, we wanted to, my wife and I wanted to go somewhere big for 5th year anniversary, and she's always had interest in Japan for other reasons, and I've had interest in Japan for mostly wrestling.
Quickly, there was another large-scale international event, this time in Riyadh. Yes, I love that Sean Rossap tweeted, for those interested, yes, the talent plane has left Saudi Arabia. They successfully left. There was no delay this time, apparently. And just to lay out, $50 million. Expect $50 million in the Q4 report, not the one that's upcoming, but the one that we will get in February. They will not tell you how much money they make in Saudi Arabia, but they will report that money inside of a black box called Other Media, one of their lines of reporting. That is the four events, not even counting this fifth one. The four events add up to $250 million, which is more than all tickets sold to WrestleMania ever, adjusted in modern dollars, adjusted for inflation. Every WrestleMania ticket ever adjusted for inflation is about $228 million, less than the $250 million that WWE has made in large-scale international events in Saudi Arabia, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, excuse me. And that is far more than AEW will make in its entire 4-year deal with WarnerMedia. Anyway, finally, Loop Capital, which is a firm that covers WWE stock, analyst Alan Gould, a Harvard grad, came out with a report. This is not terribly new, but it's about a month ago. And it really engaged with what's happening with in AEW as far as the ratings comparison. What is the percentage that I have here? That should be a dollar sign, not a percent sign. In any event, Loop Capital Alan Gould just mentions that that WWE ratings have gained strong momentum. And live touring has returned. However, he writes, AEW is giving the company the strongest competition it has had in decades, which could increase talent and marketing costs. I think it already has increased talent costs. We are raising our 2021 adjusted EBITDA estimates from to 315. So he's basically saying, I think WWE is going to be more profitable by a little bit than I thought before for the year. I will be doing an estimate this coming week, I think. I guess I could do it next week, too. But before the next report, which is November 4th, I will do an estimate, estimating the revenue and the EBITDA, OBITDA, all that stuff. He also writes, WWE is showing its first positive quarterly ratings trends in years. But upstart competitor AEW's ratings are growing even faster. Raw and SmackDown are up 5 and 7% respectively year over year based on all viewers. AEW is up 31% in total viewers and occasionally beat or tied Raw in the key demo, 18-49. Raw is going against Monday Night Football. AEW also has this new program called Rampage that is doing similar ratings to NXT. AEW is run by Tony Khan, son of Shad Khan, billionaire owner of Jacksonville Jaguars. Things like this, well, certainly not this in specific, but I could see things like this that I'm sure W Investor Relations is well aware of, at the time that it came out, end of September, just where you've got more and more people paying attention to and comparing WB to AEW. That is, you know, driving some of the actions that we're seeing here in terms of what we discussed earlier. It's a SmackDown replay coincidentally running against a first run of Dynamite. FS1 giving SmackDown an extra 30 minutes to run head-to-head with Rampage. We'll see what happens on Friday if we have a Friday Night War Part 2. That's the main story of the business to me. It's one of the most exciting. I mean, I've been covering and writing about and talking about wrestling business well before AEW existed. But this is a really interesting time in wrestling. And, you know, you get some big WWE fans that tell you they don't, that you need to stop comparing WWE to AEW. But, that's the most, at least to me, and I think to a lot of readers, audience members, listeners, viewers, etc. That's the thing that they're most interested in. Cause this is about the balance of power. And I see the shift going more to AEW over time. Why? They have a superior product in the core content on the TV show. And they have a superior head of creative in terms of his ability to execute versus WWE's head of creative's ability to execute. And, the balance of power, the order of power, is not sustainable, over a long enough period of time in its current state. WWE will always be advantaged, by its enormous legacy in terms of its video library and its various trademarks, its history that it has with fans all over the world. All those smiles they put on all those faces over the world, those are investments, not just smiles. But, AEW has a superior product. Which is going to continue to compete strongly with WWE. WWE will still have its fans. I don't know. Maybe there's a point where in many ways AEW becomes more popular than WWE. But WWE will always have, I think, its fans that are conditioned and accepting and internalizing the qualities of their content that many others find frustrating and who are finding satisfaction in an alternative that is AEW.
It's that established fan base we've talked about before too. And that's why you see they do so well in P50 plus, like as far as it's that established fan base of people that grew up with WWE and they're not going to go to anything else. And anything else is just too weird or crazy or, you know,
and WWE does, these are the differences too. WWE does better with kids. WWE does better with women, at least women 35 to 49. WWE does better with African Americans. We see that in viewership numbers from Nielsen. Why is that? I would speculate that if you look at the independent wrestling. So I see AEW kind of as like this extension of indie wrestling culture and online fan culture. Which those cultures often get dismissed and be accused of being, you know, this is the vocal minorities and people are just too loud and they're not really reflecting a real economic reality. They're just making noise and their voices are overamplified. No need to pay attention to them. But their voices have become more meaningful over time. Perhaps as the total available market has gotten smaller for wrestling. In any event, their voices have gotten more meaningful over time. The so-called vocal minority, the so-called hardcore fan, which I think is sort of a misnomer and misleading, today's hardcore wrestling fan, today's hardcore WWE fan who loves Roman Reigns, who has Roman Reigns as their profile picture on Twitter and who yells at me when I report ratings. Those are hardcore fans. That's a hardcore fan, you know, but what people are referring to, it seems to me, oftentimes when they use the term hardcore fan, they're talking about like this fan that's watching all these different wrestling products, not just WWE, right? Not barely even WWE. In any event, I think AEW, its opportunity became available in large part for a number of reasons, but in large part because there's this growing independent fan culture, this growing online fan culture. These groups of people were, increasingly dissatisfied with WWE. Talent was dissatisfied with WWE too. In any event, those, those cultures, indie wrestling fan culture, online fan culture, seem to be, and things like the Reddit census, the data that we see in that supports that, this is a disproportionately male, disproportionately white population of people. Why is that? More research needs to be done, but I would speculate that there are economic factors involved, including, do you have access to the internet? That costs money. Do you have the devices that are required to engage with online internet communities? That costs money. And maybe there's discrimination involved too, intentionally or not, but that would be my guess. Have you ever, you're on a lot of indie shows these days.
Yes. Yes.
And I've had these moments where I've been on an indie show and like I've already wrestled and I'm hanging out at the merch table and watching the show. And you look at the fans and sometimes I've been like, this is overwhelmingly white men. Have you ever noticed that, had moments like that?
Yeah. I remember when I started 10 years ago, a lot of kids in the audience. It might have been 30-40% kids.
And now, I feel like it depends on the type of show you're at, right? If you're at what I would call a local indie show, kids. If you're at a super indie show, something that's more on the end of what I would consider the super indie spectrum, white young adult men.
Yes. Yeah. And I've seen, and those used to kind of, oh, there's some kids here and there, but now there's, and I know this because like every event, I'll do the 50-50 where I pick a kid from the audience to draw the number. It makes the kids' day. Yes. The crowd cheers for him. And I've noticed a lot of my, like, I'm looking, I don't have as many kids to choose from anymore.
Yeah.
So,
well, it depends on the show you're at, but
yeah.
But the culture.
But when I first started, it was a lot of those small town shows and.
Yeah.
Where kids are a big chunk of the audience. But yes, you're right. You don't see a lot of women in the audience as well.
You see some.
Some, but not a lot.
You see some women. You see some people of color. But it's
disproportionate
to the population at large. It's white men. Why is that? For the reasons economic, perhaps discrimination as well. And I think the response to this is, okay, this is an opportunity for at least AEW to say, how can we engage our audience and people in a way that attracts a larger audience total in the end for us and embraces more people of all different backgrounds. Moving on. I think that's all for today.
Yeah. So we can, first I want to thank people, for subscribing to our YouTube. And if you haven't yet, please do.
Now that we're betraying YouTube on Twitch.
But yeah, we've reached 1,290 subscribers, and we want to keep that growing. So,
mm-hmm. Yes. As always, on YouTube, we're going back to the regular schedule. I did an emergency Tuesday instead. No, Monday instead. Right? Monday. Yes. Monday instead. Live TV ratings talk after the information related to the Friday Night War came out. But we're with Dynamite now back in its regular slot. We'll get a rating for Dynamite on Thursday. That's usually where the most interest is. So Thursday evening, early evening, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, just after the Dynamite ratings come out, you can listen to and watch the live TV ratings talk. The audio is also in the Patreon audio feed for patrons/subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, where subscribers who subscribe for $5 a month to get access to my TV ratings reports that come out nearly every single weekday, as well as you get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet with tens of thousands of data points in it, plus lots of other content. Lots of very smart people in the wrestling business subscribe to this.
We will let you guys know next week as far as what our plans are for Q3, the conference call, what we saw, and of course you'll have tons of statistics of what they lay out with comparative to other quarters and whatnot.
Yeah.
For the WWE Q3 conference call. Yeah. Which is next week, Thursday.
Yeah. I have to think about what I'm going to do. I'll tweet it. No doubt. Follow me on Twitter at WrestleNomics and at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gello.
And we'll talk to you next time.